This episode of Section D was first broadcast on Tuesday, the 23rd of April on Monocle 24. Section D is brought to you in association with Lexus. Hello and a very warm welcome to Section D, the weekly design hour here on Monocle 24 with me, Hugo MacDonald. With the 52nd Salone del Mobile done and dusted, the furniture boxed and wrapped and on its way home, we'll be taking stock over the next hour of all the fun of the fair. Coming up, we find out why making cutlery is as difficult as building buildings from architect John Paulson.
And we couldn't pick up lentils with my existing three-prong fork, so I made a five-prong fork for him, and it's just something that's a bit different and quite useful.
And away from Salone, we take stock of this year's London Design Museum Design of the Year Awards too.
It's unusual for governments to win design awards, even though there is actually a great heritage of public sector design in government. You know, Margaret Calvert was here tonight, the road signs, the tube map, these kind of things. So government, you know, has been good at this in the past.
Elsewhere, back in Milan, we hear from Philip Mainzer of German brand E15. We discuss a Swiss design institution, the Hala storage system by USM. We find out why Swedish fashion brand COS is getting in on the design world. And we talk fashion into furniture with Hermes too. That's all to come over the next hour here on Section D. Stay tuned. We begin this week's Salone-themed Section D, not with a furniture brand, but a fashion house. In 2011, Hermes made its entry into the home market with a fully-fledged, exquisitely crafted collection of furniture, fabrics and wallpapers. Last year, the fashion house pushed the conceptual boat out a little further at Salone, launching a modular system of architectural elements by Japanese architect Shigeru Ban. This year's Salone would be anyone's guess as to what the heritage French house might pull out of the bag. We send our producer, Alid John, along to Via Pizzoni to meet Hélène Dubrul, Director General of Hermès Maison, to find out more.
We're presenting here three new novelties. The first, a new collection of furniture, which is called Les Nécessaires d'Hermès. It's a line that really plays with functionality and objects that will bring a supplement of usage with all the comforts, the discreet and sober elegance of Hermès, and with the highest quality of materials and of expertise. And then we're also presenting a new story of furnishing fabrics and wallpaper. And at the end, we wanted also to highlight this year our expertise in made-to-measure bespoke pieces to answer the dreams of our clients or their architects, dreams in terms of interior architecture. And we're presenting two pieces which are like an exercise of style, a 7-meter wardrobe and a buffet, tableware buffet. And they are really extraordinary in terms of dimensions and savoir-faire.
Focusing then on the new collection, what are some of the key items you see that characterize that kind of feel for what's being unveiled at this year's Salone del Mobile?
Here we have, designed by Philippe Nigro, carré d'assises. These are some seats that are inspired from our silk scarf, that is this 90 by 90 iconic product. And Philippe Nigro designed a seat which also can be a table, a side table. And you can play with three different heights of these seats in order to modulate a new way of sitting. You also have an incredible home valet, which we have called the groom, which really is the perfect object for dressing up yourself in the morning or in the evening. And every object finds its own space. It's an articulate, very mobile, the perfect home valet. And there's also what we call the coffre à lutrin. It's like workstation, mobile workstation, where you can have your magazines, your iPad, your cup of coffee, your tea, and it is mobile, and it is, all of these objects are really made with the best of the best materials, very noble leather, of course, but also walnut, noyer canalito walnut, stainless steel, with the expertise of the best leather craftsmen, but also the best cabinet makers, tapestries. This is also where Hermès is giving something else with a definitely highest quality possible.
Looking then at the market that Hermès Maison is approaching, it's been 2 years since they entered the interior market. What challenges do you face as the general manager of Hermès Maison?
First of all, you know, the home market, we have been entering it for a long time, very long time. From the 20s, 30s, we're doing objects that are accompanying our clients into their interiors. We have had also in the 80s this formidable story and adventure with the Art de la Table tableware and all the home linen, Art de Vivre, Art of Life. That's right, that for 3 years now, we have been highlighting our whole universe, and we want to propose a global Art of Life and to be able for our client to live in Hermès or to choose just one Hermès object into their home. The big challenges is to really first to demand the highest quality possible, and this takes time, of course, and for us we have to find the best suppliers that will answer our requirements of quality. Then, of course, there's the challenge of the distribution of our stores. It takes place, more place, room, space than a silk scarf or a Birkin bag, of course. And so you need to have space, you need to have a beautiful presentation in our stores. That's why we decided to select, let's say, 30 to 40 of our Hermès stores in the world where you have a big presentation of a home collection. We are not present in all of our stores with our furniture or furnishing fabrics and wallpaper because it requires space, it requires also very specific training and sales persons. So there's also a big challenge in terms of a training for our people.
We looked at some of the challenges there. What distinguishes Hermès Maison from some of the competitors who have also branched into interiors?
Quality. Really, the idea that when you buy an Hermès bag, you know that you will have the noblest materials which will have been worked by craftsmen with traditional technique and incredible expertise. Our ambition is to do the same in the world of interiors. And this is really how we differentiate, and also the idea of our style, of course, which has to be discreet, really sober, with this in all its elegant simplicity.
Ellen, you began in Hermès in 2002, and then in 2009 you took over the Hermès Maison division. Mm-hmm. Looking specifically at your background, what goals did you have when you began in your role as a general manager of Hermès Maison?
First of all, to express the unicity of Hermès in this world of the home was the key challenge, and to define the right strategy in order to be ourselves and to be different from the environment. These are the key challenges, and of course to find the best experts in this field, experts in terms of people who are working, designers, suppliers, and because expertise is something that is required when you want to provide the best quality possible.
Have you reached those goals then? Have you achieved what you set out to do when you joined Hermès Maison as general manager?
It's my hope, and you know, with all the objects that you are that we are presenting here, you may like them or not. It's your choice. But my hope is that you really feel and experience all our quest for the best quality, the best craftsmanship values, and the idea that it is Hermès in a sense that the style is ours, is unique.
That was Hélène de Brule, Director General of Hermès Maison, talking to Section D's producer, Alid John, there. You're listening to a Salone del Mobile roundup special of Section D. Still to come, we'll be debating knives versus buildings with John Porson and designs for dogs with Japanese design house Sphera 2.
You're listening to Section D on Monocle 24, our weekly program on the best in design, architecture, graphics, and fashion. Section D is brought to you by Lexus. Lexus, creating a new chapter in amazing design, technology, and driving.
The Monocle app puts Monocle 24's pacey mix of current affairs, business, culture, and music in your pocket. Whether it's midnight in Marunouchi or sunrise in Sydney, tune in to our around-the-clock audio service live from Midori House. Or download and replay your favourite programmes using the Time Shift feature. Also at your fingertips, our complete global travel guide. Get all this and more on the go on the Monocle app.
Now, if you didn't know that the modular furniture brand USM was Swiss, it wouldn't be long before you guessed. Since 1965, they've been furnishing offices and homes the world over with their unique, instantly recognisable modular storage elements, principally the Hala range, with its steel ball and rod frames and bright glass shelves. 2 years from now, USM and Hala will be 50. I made a beeline for the brand's stand at the Fiera to sit down with Alexander Schara, the company's second-generation CEO, to talk the business of shelves.
Nowadays, all the companies, they are talking about sustainability and, you know, the sustainable growth. And with USM, that's actually a good example for this kind of policy, even though that when it was started, the furniture business, by my father about 50 years ago, nobody talked about sustainability. Really, it's a company that always had these assets in mind, and that's why the growth has always taken place from the home base in Switzerland.
And everything is still manufactured in Switzerland, and that is something that you promote very much as quite a central thing in the company, isn't it?
Yeah, of course, manufacturing in Switzerland is in a way a synonym of quality, so we wanted, of course, to keep that. Of course, on the other hand, it's also quite an expensive country, so we had to automate a lot. So now, of course, in the last 10 years, we invested about 25 million only in production tools in order to keep up with the pace, with the quantities on one hand, and also in order to reduce the cost and keep it sustainable to produce in a high wage country like Switzerland.
And the products themselves that you make, the furniture, it's very, very simple idea, really, isn't it? And is it very important for you that you stay doing one thing very well, or do you look to expand the product offering constantly?
Yeah, in a way, I think it's a bit the Swiss way to do the things well that you know to do. So in a way, the product really very much looked like the originals in the 60s. But then there has been a lot of hidden development to all the technical accessories or the hinges or whatever functional parts of the product. So even though that the look remained the same, there has been a constant evolution in the product and a constant refinement for that.
And I'm sure that the business practice has changed quite a bit as well since your father started it with expansion beyond the boundaries of Switzerland. How many countries are you present in today?
Yeah, it's quite interesting because the first real big order was for a bank in Paris, the Rothschild Bank in Paris. So there is a tradition of exporting goods. And then one very, I think the second very big one was actually here in Milano, the Montedori editor was in the Niemeyer building. So that shows a bit, there was always a link, let's say, of modern architecture to our product or of internationality. So you can't say that in the 60s it was maybe even the share of export in some years where they had this big project was almost 90% of the production went also abroad. Right now we are established in Germany with a non-company, in the US, in France, in Japan. And then we have a lot of dealers worldwide in 30 countries, let's say 30 plus countries.
And are you making a big push in China or Brazil or any of the other emerging countries that so many people talk about moving into here at the fair?
No, in China we are right now still in quite a niche market, you know, Shanghai, Peking, more like in actually the niche of the real estate, architecture or so, people that have maybe smaller offices and very high-end offices. But it's true, we have to keep that on the radar, expanding in these mass markets. But there's maybe also a bit of a limitation for a small Swiss company really to, you know, to invade a country like China. It sounds very tempting, but then on the other hand, there are quite a lot of risks involved. So we're going more by on the exclusive road.
And you're about to have a very big anniversary for USM. What will you be doing in the future? Is it going to be staying very much on track with what you have been doing, or do you think you might see any more developments into maybe the home?
Yeah, definitely. I think we have seen in Switzerland, it's actually not a new development, but more and more of the share of our production is going into the homes. I mean, we can actually just see it right now at the Jean Nouvel show here at the Fiera, that, you know, he's sort of postulating that the home and the office, it's going to be in the future very much the same. So that's definitely a trend that we are following naturally with our products. But in Switzerland, I think the share has traditionally been much higher in the home. And that's also what we try to push market-wise. And it's also the focus point for the next 2 years in our product developments to develop special tools, special items for USM at home.
That was Alexander Schara, CEO of Swiss modular furniture brand USM, talking to me there at the fairgrounds during the 52nd Salone del Mobile in Milan. Coming up, we'll be collaring architect John Paulson at the launch of his new tabletop collection for Belgian company When Objects Work, after this.
You're listening to Section D on Monocle 24, our weekly program on the best in design, architecture, graphics, and fashion. Section D is brought to you by Lexus. Lexus, creating a new chapter in amazing design, technology, and driving.
Each Sunday on Monocle 24, we like to take stock.
The wonder of history for the journalist is you can delve into this immense booty of information.
I don't even know what to think about that.
Take the global pulse.
I was at a bunga bunga party the other day.
And?
I wasn't at all. I just wanted to start a show like that.
We're 187 shows down. How's your week been?
I'm feeling 187, actually.
And occasionally take things down a notch, too.
I had a pair of plum suede loafers with gold snaffles. The guy stopped his car and leant out of the window and said it was people like me who were bringing this country to its knees.
To end the week with the best chat.
We know that he had them and we know that he used them before.
Because we still had the receipts.
Well, there's that.
Some great music.
Do you know, I never thought that I might need to have a question about death metal, but I'm warming up.
And some good fun to set up Sunday and warm the week ahead. The Monocle Weekly. Your week starts here.
You're listening to a special Salone del Mobile roundup here on Section D. Architect John Paulson has been tasked with building the world's biggest design museum in London. During the Salone, however, he launched a collection of home accessories for Belgian firm When Objects Work, who he has a long-standing relationship with. He took a few minutes out with our contributing editor, Alicia Kirby, to talk about his new pieces, which include a steak knife made by a Japanese firm that makes samurai swords, a five-prong fork, and how he feels designing flatware is just as complex for him as designing a building.
So we're here in front of a kind of ongoing collection of tableware that you've been doing for the Belgian firm When Objects Work. Could you tell us a little bit about the newer items launching today, like this beautiful steak knife?
It's an object, but it's also a tool, and I wanted it not only to do its job, but also not to be too sinister, and to be a beautiful thing in the hand, but also on the table. And it's exquisitely made. And it has an ebony handle. And you can't really feel the junction between the ebony and the steel. And you can put it down in several different positions on the table. And it has this sort of rather sensual curve upwards. And it's pretty sharp too.
And another thing that you've designed is actually a five-pronged fork.
Yes, well, the thing about the knives and forks and spoons, I mean, the flatware, is that all the handles are the same. It's just the heads that are different. I had a client whose project I did, and I said, you know, was he happy with it after 6 months? And he said, my only complaint about the design, you know, this was an interior of a yacht, was that he couldn't pick up lentils with my existing three-prong fork, so I made a five-prong fork for him, and it's just something that's a bit different and quite useful.
And will you be making your wine tumblers bigger? Because that was another complaint that he mentioned.
Yes, he thought the wine glass wasn't big enough for red wine, or for the amount of red wine, I guess, that he drank. But we've made another size. I mean, it's a bit like Japan when you have a small sake cup, but you can get through an awful lot of sake because they keep helping you. As soon as your glass is empty, they keep filling it. So I suppose it's the same thinking behind not having such a huge glass.
And we're just going to walk over to these amazing bowls over here, which are actually, they're filled with sand, I understand.
Yeah, well, the idea is that it's a half sphere, a hemisphere. The sand inside the two skins allows you to position it wherever you want. So you can sort of shake it, and it can be then sort of level, or you can sort of make it, if you shake and leave the sand at the bottom, you can actually make it so it's more like receiving a baseball in a big glove.
And how is your kind of approach to each of these objects? Because you've been working with Beatrice, the owner of When Objects Works, for a while.
Well, it's very much the same as a building. I think people don't understand. They always say, gosh, why on earth would you want to do a steak knife? You know, because you're an architect. And, you know, these sort of things, small, it's just a difference in scale, but the kind of attention to detail and the refinement of doing small things right, lots of small things right, make a good building, I think. And it's the same with the cook pots or the knife. And, of course, they're much, much more complicated than you think. I mean, people assume buildings to be complicated. But cook pots or steak knives or even designing sort of slightly different shape for a glass is highly kind of complicated.
And could you tell us a little bit about your kind of upcoming architectural projects this year? Obviously, you've got the Design Museum in London.
We've got the Design Museum coming up, which is a retuning of the old Commonwealth Institute, which was designed in the late 50s and built finished in 1962. So that will be really retuning it for a different kind of use, which will be amazing, and it'll probably be the biggest design museum in the world. We've also retuned an old church in Augsburg in Bavaria, which ironically was bombed by the British, and it was rebuilt after the war, but in a very sort of simple style, and it was mucked around within the 70s, so we've brought it back to a much simpler and more comfortable place for the congregation, because it's the local church for a lot of people. So that's opening on April the 21st, and it's big. It's a very big space. So.
That was British architect John Paulson with our Alicia Kirby there in Via Pontaccio during the Salone del Mobile. This year, Swedish fashion retailer COS was at Salone del Mobile for a second time. The label's key pieces for spring-summer 2013 were displayed on a special installation designed by French duo Remy Clement and Morgan Macari. Our associate editor Nelly Gochiva met COS's head designers Karen Gustafsson and Martin Anderson in their pop-up showroom in the Venture Lambrate district to learn more about the brand's latest line. First, she asked how the duo manages to combine fashion and architecture in their signature well-structured pieces, and why COS is keen to make its mark in the world of design.
When we start to research our collections every season, Kari and I would get together and sort of collect everything we've seen in the last 6 months that's inspired us, and we put it all on a table and start to sort it out into concept. And always one of the key things that we sort of look to is interior design, and it can be, you know, the great mid-century modern masters that we keep coming back to, the Scandinavian heritage, or new and upcoming designers. So, as that's such an important starting point, then it's really just a celebration of that connection, really, to come here. And we hope that our customers and people to come here to view destruction, that they can see the link between the collection and interior design.
You have such a strong and expressed Scandinavian feel to your brand, and the pieces are really well structured. And as you said, they're clearly inspired by architecture. So why are you at Salone? Is that the main reason?
Yeah, but it's a place that excites us. We were here the first time last year and we had an amazing time, and we really like this area in particular, where we saw a lot of young the variation was broad, but it was really interesting to see. And it's nice for us to show our collection in this context, and we think hopefully a lot of people that are around here would like our collection.
Do you see any difference between the crowd here, because we are at Salone, so obviously most of the visitors here are somehow involved with interior design and architecture. What is the difference compared to, fashion shows and fashion trade fairs?
You know, the two fields are very similar. It's all about aesthetic and, clever design and great function. That's exactly how we think of our collection, and that's exactly, I think, how people see their homes and when they get inspired for their furniture and what furniture they like in their homes.
But also what's quite nice, I think, it's when we come here and we see all these kind of, it's a very creative crowd that come here, but it's actually very, very similar to sitting going to one of our stores and seeing customers coming in there. And it's nice to see that it's very much part of our world, and we always see that customer, we never talk of one specific customer, it's more of a group of people, and we always say that we'd like to think that they're quite interested in art and design, they know about it, they go out, they read, magazines like Monocle, and they're out there and they know what they want. So to see that actually, it's kind of, it's very interesting. We're very happy, I think.
And also, speaking of customers, if we if you kind of move more globally, what is the biggest interest? Like, where are the most interested countries coming from? I mean, because you're pretty famous in the Scandinavian countries, obviously. You have a huge fan base in the UK already. So are you planning to develop your markets internationally, and towards what parts of the world?
We are planning to open in new markets, but there's nothing we have confirmed at this stage. But at this stage we have, is it 16? We have, it's not only Scandinavia. We also have stores in Spain and, like here in Italy, and also in the Middle East now,
Far East. We're in mainland China now, Hong Kong as well.
We have stores in quite a broad market.
Yeah. So we are speaking about your latest collection right now. Can you just walk me through some of your main pieces and also main fabrics?
This is the spring-summer collection you see here today. And here we got inspired by a few things. One of the moods was something around the escapism. We felt very much for this sort of way of going back to basic and holiday in a very basic way. We looked at this boat, this fantastic, amazing, minimal and really super functional boat. And we looked at the sort of details and we imagined who would live on that boat and what they would like to wear. And the qualities are very much of that feel. We have like slab effects that are almost similar to like an old-fashioned sailcloth, and there's a lot of crisp cottons and some technical coatings.
And what about the men's collection?
I mean, it's always come from the same place, so it's very similar. This whole idea of going back to basics, escapism, and also a sportswear influence, but kind of quite chic sportswear. And we felt for lots of white, so kind of white sportswear, something very pure. But also we looked at a tree hotel in the northern Sweden, and about sort of going back to basics in that way as well. But it's more about dried out colours, and so there's dried out pastels, like dried out pinks and greens, sort of sage green, in a more tailored way. We felt for like a new kind of utility influence in tailoring in sets. So not necessarily a tailored blazer together with trousers, but it can just be like a shirt and trouser in the same fabric, you know, a new kind of set.
That was COS's head designers Karen Gustafsson and Martin Anderson talking to our own Nelly Gociva there in the Ventura Lembrate cluster of shows during Milan's Salone del Mobile. You're listening to a Salone special edition of Section D here on Monocle 24. Now, Salone del Mobile may be a showcase for Italy's top design brands, but not all the stands at the Milan Furniture Fair featured products made by the host country. Germany's E15 is a fairly new addition to the world of furniture, but the Frankfurt-based firm stood out at the fairgrounds with a display that didn't shout for attention, but instead offered a clever mix of new and not-so-new pieces. Monocle's Milan correspondent Ivan Carvalho sat down with E15's co-founder and creative director, Philip Mainzer, to learn more.
We are a company founded in London initially 18 years ago, and our philosophy is really about craftsmanship and high-quality materials and combining those with a very modern, contemporary design.
As a German-based brand, because you're based in Frankfurt, what is it like being at a fair like this in Milan?
Since like pretty much 70% of our business is export, so this fair is a very important fair for us, because most of the international clients, customers come here. So it has been a great experience, and I think this year has been one of our best shows. I mean, it's hard to believe since everybody's talking about crisis, but it's for us, it's an extremely good show.
Now, just explain a little bit about E15 and the design aesthetic that you're trying to propose to the clients.
Well, it's very much about never to design for the design's sake. It's rather to design to feature the quality of the material, to feature the natural materials, and create character objects that have a strong character yet blend with other interiors. So it's not really, we don't request from our customers that they fit the entire living room or bedroom with E15. We really want them to blend different products, and that's our aim, to really create a product that allows for this and still adds character and warmth to every interior, and allows them to be a little bit more eclectic.
Now, a lot of brands at Salon de Mobile are introducing new pieces, but I see here you're again reissuing this sofa, for example, by Ferdinand Kramer. Just to maybe explain a little bit the story there.
The connection with Kramer is there's different levels. I mean, first of all, he's a great designer, and his aesthetic fits very well with E15. He also was an architect and designer, so it's very similar to my work, that really thinking across the board and crossing boundaries. And he also comes from Frankfurt, so he was actually started working in Frankfurt before the war, had to emigrate to the States because his first wife was Jewish, and then came back after the war in the 50s and became the building director of the Frankfurt University, and he basically rebuilt the entire university, including the furniture that was required for the university.
Now, the sofa from Ferdinand Kramer here, this is from before the war, this piece. What was the attraction in reintroducing this sofa?
Well, basically it's the simplicity of this piece, and it's really, I mean, considering it was designed in 1926, was designed for the Hausrat company, which is was supposed to cater to social housing projects. So it was very simple in its construction and also its shape, which now is a very contemporary, has a very contemporary feel. So another very important introduction, new introduction here at the fair in Milan is the seating range by Stefan Dietz, designer based in Munich. The series contains of three pieces, which is a classic side chair for dining tables, a lounge chair, and a bar stool. It's called This, That, and Other, which sort of refers back to the first line of seating products he did for us a few years ago, which were called Houdini, named after the magician Houdini. And those pieces were kind of very strong character couture pieces where the actual plywood is shaped on the piece, gluing it to the base, and which is a very elaborate process. In this case, the brief was to do, rather than the couture, do the t-shirt line of that couture line, which sort of simplifies the process. It's still based on the same principles where sheet plywood is shaped and connected with solid parts, but we reduced the number of components and they are pre-shaped, so it's a much more industrial process behind this. And This, That, and Other is like a very popular card trick that magicians like to do, so that's where the name actually comes from, referring back to magician Houdini.
That was Philipp Mainzer, co-founder and creative director of German design brand E15 there, talking to our Milan correspondent Ivan Carvalho at the fairgrounds during Salone. Up next, Japanese dog design. For dog accessories made by master craftsmen, we dropped into the Milan showroom of Japanese design brand Sfera, who just launched the collection in honour of the creative director Masahiro Shigeo's French bulldog named Dong. The Kyoto-based firm showed a collection made up of dog vests made by an ancient kimono maker, toys carved from sakura cherry wood by a master woodworker, and they even played a soundtrack composed for the firm, layered with Dong's snuffling and other sounds that are only audible to dogs. Sfera's general manager, Naoko Kubo, talked our contributing editor, Alicia Kirby, through the new collection.
We're here today at Sfera, which is a Kyoto-based design brand with a big focus on craft. And they've just launched a dog accessories brand, and we're here with Naoko, who will talk us through a little bit about the items. So I'm looking at a spectacular dog bed. Could you tell me kind of what it's made of and what master craftsman actually made this?
Yes, this is designed by Shigeo Mashiro, Sfera's creative director, and his good friend, craftsman Shuji Nakagawa, made this bed. It's made of umbrella pine, very precious kind of wood in Japan. So he used a very traditional technique to use the wood basils.
He's very famous for making the wooden buckets that Japanese onsens have, is that correct? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's right.
And over here we have, is it a copper food caddy for a dog?
This is made by Kaikado. It's also very traditional Japanese tea caddy manufacturer in Kyoto. It's made of copper, and we printed the illustration of a dog.
And even the little kind of dog jacket is made from a kimono manufacturer, is that?
Yes, the brand is Hoso. It's also very traditional Nishijin fabric manufacturer in Kyoto. They usually made, for example, kimono. We use the fabric they designed and made the vest for French bulldog.
And what are these things over here?
This is the toys for dog. It's made of the cherry tree and made by a craftsman, Shoji Morinaga. He based in Kagoshima in Japan.
And even the music. Should we go and have a listen to the music over here? What's so special about the soundtrack?
We recorded the sound of Don. Don is a French bulldog. So like his sound, sleep and eat and walking. And our collaborator, the musician Gak Sato, used that sound and made this music.
And Don is the pet of the owner of Sfera, is that correct?
Yes, it's the Mashiro. Mashiro is a creative director of Sfera and his dog.
And could we just have a listen to, could you turn the volume up a little bit?
Yes.
Is that okay? So the music has sounds of Don breathing and sniffling, yes, in between, in the layers of the track. And you play this soundtrack throughout many of your Sfera stores, is that right?
Yes, we do.
That was Naoko Kubo, General Manager of Sfera, talking to our Alicia Kirby there at the Japanese Brands Showroom in Milan. You're listening to Section D. Now away from the wealth of news of Salone del Mobile, another story broke days after the shenanigans in Milan had ended. The annual London Design Museum's Design of the Year Awards were announced last Wednesday. From several categories and several nominations within each, a shortlist was whittled down by an esteemed panel of judges. 2 years ago, the overall winner was the Plumen light bulb. Last year, it was Barbara Osgoby's Olympic torch design. This year, in front of a glittering crowd of design luminaries, the winner was announced as the UK government's website, gov.co.uk. A surprise victor? Well, our researcher David Pleasant was on hand to take the temperature of the room and find out. He began by asking head juror Ilse Crawford why.
Looking at 99 nominations and choosing an overall winner from those, it's a tough call. And there were category winners for all the different disciplines, graphics, fashion, architecture, product, furniture, and so on. But how to distill that down to the design of the year? Well, it has to be, I think, to use Victor Papanek's famous phrase, design is only important insofar as it relates to people. So that was really my test, looking at the category winners on the table. Which one really was going to be the game changer? What was really going to affect us the most? And actually, what has been the biggest shift? And I think GovUK is that. I mean, anybody who's had the experience of trying to get information around government in the past, it's a nightmare. This is really going to change things for many, many people.
At the exhibition, the GovUK section of the exhibition was curated alongside a screen that showed the amount of people using the site across the country, so you really got a feel for just how used it was. If we go on and talk about some of the other category winners, can you just tell us something about what kind of unified them? And we've talked today about how kind of disparate and how different a lot of the entries were, from, you know, a raspberry to a donkey and yes, so on. But if there's one thing that unifies all the category winners and indeed all the nominees, what that might be?
It comes back to the idea of the designer as a person who makes new realities that make sense. So for example, an obvious one of that would be the Cola Life Award for product, because they started at the other end of the chain. I mean, so often ideas relating to the developing world which don't think about distribution, whereas they started from distribution and worked back from that, which is incredibly smart. On the other extreme, perhaps you might think that the graphics award, you know, maybe not consistent with that, but I think what's so interesting about the graphics award is, if you like, it's a sort of quiet is the new loud. It's not a statement. It's just incredibly well done. And in Venice, the graphics for the Architecture Biennale were contextual. They came out of the place, but yet were incredibly visible. They didn't destroy the place. They were sensitive to the context, but yet incredibly recognisable and clear and communicate.
Hi, I'm Ben Terrett. I'm Head of Design at the Government Digital Service, and we have just won Design of the Year.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
There seems to be a kind of element of surprise, but also a bit of kind of relief amongst the audience, that I think everyone felt like it was a just award, a just winner. Can you tell us something about the process that went into designing this huge website that affects millions of people every second? Tell us what went into it all.
I think really at the heart of it, it's very simple. We have a relentless focus on user needs. That's what's driving this. What is the user need? What is the need the user has of government? What are they trying to do? And then we've designed a website around that, and we've never really deviated from that. And we go back to that, and those need to change over time. And, you know, so we constantly just refer to that, and that really guides us. You know, that's it really. There's no sort of magic sauce. You know, we just focus on user needs.
But surely when you are dealing with something as complex as government and many public services that the government offers, what were some of the challenges that you came across in terms of designing that interface, that those different levels of a website?
Lots of people ask that question, and it's not easy. You know, there are challenges, but I think it's important that when this project was set up, it was welcomed with open arms. You know, people said, we know our digital stuff can be better. Either we don't know how to make it better, or there's a process getting in the way of us making it better.
What do you think makes it distinctive as a design product fundamentally, besides the fact of how many people are affected by it, which, you know, it's a hands-down winner? Why is it a winner in terms of its productivity or some of its features?
It's kind of, as the minister said, it's unusual for governments to win design awards, even though there is actually a great heritage of public sector design in government. You know, Margaret Calvert was here tonight, the road signs, the tube map, these kind of things. So government, you know, has been good at this in the past. I think what's unusual, there are very few governments doing this, you know, making one website and making their website simpler. What is not unusual is that we are building the web the way people build the web. So we are building the web the way Google would build Google, and the way Facebook build Facebook. And we're talking about a digital product in the way they do it, and they focus on user needs. And the skills we're looking for in designers are the same skills those guys are looking for. And so I think that bit is not unusual. You sort of see what I mean.
My name is Nick Hurd. I'm the Minister for Civil Society, and I'm here to pick up an award on behalf of the government for the best design in 2013.
That's a nice thing to do for a change.
Well, on the whole, governments don't win awards for design, and so this is rather special for us. But we're just really pleased that the jury had a sense of what we were trying to achieve with the design of GovUK, where, you know, we started in a situation where we had about 2,000 government websites that didn't talk to each other, were really difficult for the public to use. And in just 2 years, we've changed that completely and designed a website that we're really proud of, which someone has described as the Paul Smith of websites. And we feel we've made a really, really good start in just to really try and change the experience of dealing with government. And that's what good design can help us achieve. And we're just really thrilled to get the recognition for that.
I'd like to kind of touch on that theme of design and government. Was it a lot of work trying to convince the people involved to kind of put the funding in? I mean, design doesn't come cheap always. It needs that kind of investment. Do you think there was a lot of arm twisting involved, or would you say it was a kind of no-win situation from the outset?
There wasn't a lot of arm twisting. I mean, the fact that we've achieved this in 2 years means that there wasn't a huge amount of time spent discussing it. We knew that we wanted to change the experience of dealing with government. It's about engaging people, which is what good design really does. We knew we had to get away from a system where we had all these websites, including one dedicated to the British mosquito, and create something that people could use and that worked for people and that was sort of compatible with their every other experience of dealing online. And that's quite a big revolution for government, to really think about what the user needs rather than what any particular government department wants to tell or offer. And that was a big, big cultural change. And part of it is we want, you know, citizens in this country to have the opportunity to do more online with government. That obviously gives us a chance to save some money, which is important, but also just bring that experience of dealing with government in line with day-to-day experience of doing anything, really, whether it's shopping or so. It's dragging government into the modern age, but to win a design award on top of all that is something quite special for us. Yeah.
That was our David Pleasant there, canvassing opinions on the London Design Museum's Design of the Year Award results there. And that brings us to the end of this week's episode of Section D. Fear not, we'll be back next week with yet more from Milan, together with the latest from Marianne Goebel, head of Design Miami too. This week's episode was edited by Holly Fisher and produced by Alid John. You can contact Alid on awj@monocle.com to bend his ear or suggest any stories you think might be perfect Section D fodder. I'm Hugo MacDonald, and playing you out, here's what I've been listening to for much of this last week. Get Lucky, the brand new single by Daft Punk featuring Pharrell Williams, who is himself a design lover. Enjoy. Goodbye. She's up all night till the sun. I'm up all night to get some. She's up all night for good fun. I'm up all night to get lucky. We're up all night till the sun. We're up all night to get some.